Hey everyone, Gary Gramling here. We have a special episode of the MMQB podcast today on the collapse of the Alliance of American Football, the AAF. Producer Harry Swartout sat down with our own Albert Breer and Connor Orr to tell the story. Enjoy.
The first thing to understand about the Alliance of American Football is that it wasn't just a football league. It was never supposed to be. This vehicle for spring football and development system for the NFL was wrapped around what was, at its heart, a tech startup. According to the Alliance, every hit, every pass, and every kick was being tracked by sophisticated sensors all over the field. It was that information, the deep, granular, technical data, and how it could potentially be used, which set the AAF apart from other startup leagues. Tech was the Alliance's greatest strength, and also its ultimate downfall.
More breaking news tonight in Birmingham. The Alliance of American Football has suspended operations before the inaugural season even ended.
After 8 weeks of games, the AAF suspended its operations yesterday.
Begin today with the end of the AAF, before we even knew the names of all the teams.
Right from the launch announcement, co-founder Charlie Ebersole sold the Alliance on two things: the gravitas of football names like Bill Polian, Jared Allen, and Justin Tuck, and the app. While the Alliance wasn't the first league with the soul of a tech company to aspire to license their app, the AAF promised a new frontier of fantasy football and gambling.
The tech, from what I understand, is incredible.
MMQB senior football writer Albert Breer.
There's a lag time with the data of about 3 seconds with most apps. For what happens in the field to get into the app, there's about a 3 second lag time. Well, that doesn't sound like much, but it matters. And with this app, there is no lag time. It's instantaneous. And why does that matter? Well, that matters because that's going to allow you to gamble on individual plays. And the NFL believes that's where the money is. That's where the technology that the AAF has was going to create advances.
Leaning on the millions of gambling dollars hidden in his wonder tech, Charlie Ebersole sold the league to investors as if it was a Silicon Valley startup rather than an upstart sports league. And he structured it like a tech startup too. The AAF would be a top-down operation. Signing players and coaches, booking stadiums, and making TV deals would all be done from a central position, with the league controlling everything. And investments to the league would be divided evenly between all 8 teams and league offices. In traditional leagues, each team operates independently. When you're a bigger, more established league, like the NFL, that can be an advantage. But for a smaller league just getting started, every team for themselves free-for-alls can tear a league apart. Here's AAF co-founder Charlie Ebersole from an interview with Sports Illustrated back in October.
People are coming in and writing us $10 million checks, $50 million checks, $100 million checks that go into the parent company, which is the Alliance of American Football. This is one of the core philosophies that I believe in that I think killed most of the other leagues, was that they ended up in situations where you had individual investors who are working against the best interest of the overall league. We don't want rogue billionaires who get to just make blanket decisions.
No rogue billionaires meant a league with no financial competition between teams. Only football competition. A perfect and hopefully stable environment to do the league's real job. Demonstrate the power of their technology. And it did. For about 2 weeks. That's when the money got tight.
The Alliance had a commitment, a very large commitment, of more than $100 million.
That's MMQB staff writer Connor Orr.
That money was supposed to hit the league at a certain time and then be a continuation of the funds that they were already spending. Things kind of got murky because some of the funding was up front and other parts of the funding were coming from a bank overseas. And so the way it was explained to me is that if you're taking money from somewhere else, especially overseas like that, and there's a large transfer, there's different things that are involved, Homeland Security, you need to have everything accounted for, and that takes time. And so that ends up delaying when you can eventually get the money and use the money and have it be a liquid asset.
Enter Tom Dundon, owner of the NHL's Carolina Hurricanes.
that's where the attraction to Tom came in, because we don't have to wait 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks for this bank to get back to us. We have a guy who is already in professional sports, a guy who's known in NFL circles, who was vetted by the NFL, everything checked out with his finances. And so it's like, okay, well, you know, why wouldn't we just go with this guy? Because he already owns the Carolina Hurricanes. He already has management experience. You know, this is attractive to all of us right now. And so that was really where the shift happened. At least this is kind of how the people inside the AAF are explaining this right now.
Like other investors before him, Dundon saw through the football to the technology at the core of the alliance. And he liked what he saw, to the tune of $70 million.
He was fascinated with the gambling app and with the technology and with the data. This was said in their internal meetings, was we're a technology company that has football teams.
The football teams around Dundon's new technology company were spending tons of money in order to look legitimate. At the time of Dundon's buy-in, the Alliance had been doing everything a real football league was supposed to do, at least from a distance.
I think you can look at the Alliance as almost like a movie set. And what I mean by that is, if you look at a movie set from far away, it looks great. And the closer you get, the more you can see that this might not be real or that might not be real. The games look great on TV. The uniforms look good. First class from a hotel standpoint, the food, like all that stuff was great. I don't think the plan was terrible, but I think they needed a couple of things to succeed pretty quickly. One of which was, you know, the gambling technology, where either they would be able to turn around and make money, or the NFL would see value in the idea of, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to start either financing them or we're going to buy them outright. And that didn't happen. I think a lot of what was done over the last 6 or 7 months was creating this facade.
What Dundon's money bought him was a controlling stake in the Alliance. In other words, the right to be the one thing the AAF promised it would never court. A rogue billionaire.
His injection of money made him the controlling owner, right? So he could shut the league down whenever he wanted. He could do whatever he wanted to the league. Someone joked in the building, he sort of had that Trumpian vibe to him, where definitely like a budget slasher. He went in and tried to redo all their stadium deals. He was interested in redoing television deals. He wanted to, it seems like, cut the league's costs drastically enough that maybe you turn into profitability faster.
At first, it was little things like changing first class flights to commercial flights. But slowly, the budget cuts became more severe.
It was who was allowed to go on the road. They went from, at the beginning, having everyone on the road and trying to make this like we're all in this together type of thing. You know, now all of a sudden, you had the ticket guy who wasn't on the road. Well, now who's going to handle tickets at the game for the players? The social media manager's not on the road. The team content people aren't on the road. The team president isn't on the road. It got broken down to just essential personnel, basically coaches, the game day staff, and then the players. And then when you went on those trips, what did you see? Well, now all of a sudden, not everybody's getting fed on the plane. Doesn't seem like that big a deal, but if you've got doctors and trainers, you know, those sorts of people, and they're not eating on the plane, they see everybody else eating on the plane, that's something that's going to raise people's antenna. You know, then when they got to the cities, there was no more team meals. For a brief time, there was a hold on everybody's credit cards. Not that those things are the end of the world, but it's clearly signs like that this thing wasn't set up the way that it needed to be set up if they needed to be cutting in those places.
Dundon also attempted to speed up the process of getting the NFL Players Association involved in the Alliance.
There was that USA Today report 2 weeks before the league shut down where Tom had basically said, I'm pulling my funding if we don't have a relationship with the NFLPA. And, you know, that came as a surprise to a lot of coaches, to a lot of players, to some people inside the building. If you're creating this sort of egalitarian football league, it's probably a pretty ominous presence.
The relationship with the NFL Players Association didn't materialize. And on April 2nd, the Alliance abruptly stopped operations. Very abruptly.
So it's kind of hard to enact any disaster readiness plan if you don't know when the disaster is going to happen. When they decided to pull funding for the AAF, players heard about this in the car. on the practice field, on their way to team meetings. Really, it was reports on Twitter, stuff that they had seen on Google or whatever it was. That was really the most difficult part, I think, for a lot of coaches and general managers, because what do? You have to pull everybody in. A lot of teams called meetings. Some teams just canceled practice, but there was still that sense that, like, okay, we're in this bizarre startup atmosphere. And so they said the league suspended, so we'll probably just be back in a couple days, you know. So everybody just go back to your hotel rooms, chill out. That's when I think everything started to get a little crazy, right?
For a while, players, coaches, and employees all waited for the league to start back up. But in the meantime, they were getting kicked out of their hotels. The window was closing.
The one window of opportunity that they would have had, I think if you'll remember, the league shut down before the Final Four. They had that time slot on CBS with Johnny Manziel playing before the Final Four. And so you're looking at it as, okay, well, you know, these people are going to get to bars early and they're going to see our product that might have seen it before. You know, they're going to get on the couch early with a sandwich and they're going to turn on CBS and they're going to see Johnny Manziel. And so you estimate however many viewers that is, could bring in new eyeballs, certainly something that advertisers would look for. And so I think that if it were to reboot, it would have been from some sort of Hail Mary investment where an investor would have recognized that opportunity and said, okay, you know what? Let's give it a shot until the end of the league. I got millions of dollars to burn, and this is a good chance to put some money behind it.
The Alliance was officially dead. But had Tom Dundon actually secured the technology, the supposed golden goose that was at the center of this whole thing? Immediately? No. We spoke to one source with knowledge of the business side, and this person believes the tech is going to league investor MGM. But there might be a fight for the app on the way.
There's a fight there that I think is probably coming, that I think a lot of people who are involved in the league believe is coming. I don't know which way that part of it goes. We'll see. I mean, we haven't heard him speak publicly either yet. I do know he owns an NHL team, and I do know the technology that they have was very, very valuable. And so any sort of access to that technology, the $70 million risk might have been worth it, even if you were just getting a peek under the hood, even if you weren't able to drive the car off the lot. If you can do what the AAF was trying to do with the technology, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars.
As the tech battle continues above their heads, the players who find themselves freshly unemployed by the Alliance are moving on. More than 40 players have signed with the NFL. More proof that the league's on-field football product was actually successful. But that's not the case for everyone.
I think a lot of them feel like they got screwed. There are a lot of guys who felt like they were sold a bill of goods the same way the coaches and executives feel that way.
As of this recording, two players have filed a class action lawsuit against the Alliance, claiming it misled and defrauded them. It's unclear who's responsible for the breaking of the Alliance of American Football.
Who is the bad guy or who is the good guy in this story? It's fascinating to me. Right now, if you look at it, again, we're a week removed from the league closing down. Certainly, Tom Dundon is being painted as the person who closed down the Alliance of American Football. But we haven't heard from Tom Dundon. We reached out, I'm sure a lot of people reached out to Tom Dundon after the league closed down, but we don't know exactly what his motives were for doing this. And so you have to give someone like that the benefit of the doubt in case that there was a legitimate red flag somewhere in the books that came up that spooked him enough to want to essentially cut bait on something that he had made an initial investment in. And so if you talk to people outside of all of this that just follow it from a business perspective, you could say, oh, well, at least from the academic sense, it doesn't look like the AAF had a sound business plan. And so does that make Charlie the bad guy in this and not Tom Dundon? Is needing Tom Dundon a recognition of the shortcomings in the first place? And so what is really going to be fascinating about this, it's going to play out in court. Who really sunk the Alliance of American Football?
In just 8 weeks, the Alliance accomplished a lot. The football was good. The tech was promising. They just ran out of money. And with legal gambling and real-time technology creeping ever forward, expect to see more copycat tech companies posing as football leagues.
That's why you saw so many people so enthusiastically jumping into something we've seen fail over and over and over again. The idea that a minor league in football will work in this country. I mean, we've seen it time and again. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked in the past. So why was everybody so enthusiastic about this? Why is everybody so enthusiastic about the Pacific Pro League, about the XFL? Well, there's tech opportunities with these things. There's big money to be made. And so part of the story of the AAF is being a small piece of the larger race to get in front of sports gambling in this country.
This episode of the MMQB was produced by me, Harry Swartout. Albert Breer and Connor Orr reported our story. Our executive producer is Scott Brody. Thanks for listening.